Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, Anzac Day tributes. It's working as well as ever. Sydney, should the cola be reintroduced? And we look at what's gone wrong with West Coast and what's gone right with Fremantle.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh! The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Tuesday, which means it's time for the first edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. We're brought to you by Tab Touch. Have with me in the studio Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I am Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper.
Soldiering on today, Duff, too, but I might add. You've not been well, but you've come out off your deathbed and you're in here.
I was late withdrawal on the weekend, Glenn. You know, I've missed three games in 16 years through illness, and they were Fremantle's first final in 2003, my nephew's 100th game for Fremantle against Adelaide in 2012, and at the weekend, which was David Mundy's 300.
Three big games.
So when I when I get the lurgy, I tend to pick the wrong time to do it.
You're
so
like the David Parkin of Perth. Hasn't it missed a grand final in 60 years or something? He's been to every grand final.
Is that right?
Yeah, incredible record, including as a player and a coach.
I was going to say, he probably participated in 30 of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, amazing record.
All right, so Easter round sort of rolled into Anzac round. What did you make of it all? And where are we sitting after six rounds?
I'll give you my coach's quote of the weekend. To start with, it's a game of seconds, it's a game of quarters, and it's a game of moments. Brendan Bolton, I'm going to add to that. It's a game of two halves, because that's what that game was. We'll get to that game a bit later. But
well, let's get straight onto it, because you've brought it up. Remarkable game in Launceston.
Mm.
Remarkable first half performance by Carlton. Remarkable second half fight back by Hawthorn. Who takes more out of the game? Obviously, the Hawks keeps them in touch with the top end of the ladder. The Blues,
Hawks get the 4 points, Duff. I think if you're a Carlton supporter, you'd probably take more from that game than a Hawthorn supporter. Great effort by Hawthorn in the second half. I think Carlton sort of fell away, which is what we expect from them. They just can't get the four quarters together at the moment. They did the week before against the Western Bulldogs. I reckon you walk away from that saying, we are so close to just get stringing a few quarters. They just, as soon as they get the four quarters happening on a consistent basis, they're going to be a side you don't want to play. Some great standout performances. Cruiser in the first half, obviously in the second half. He couldn't go on with it. But some great individual performance. Also, Jagger O'Meara. But I just reckon, you know, Hawthorn still, there's a big question mark over where they're going and how quickly they're going there. But I think with Carlton, I think we can all see now there's a direction and they're not going to deviate from that now. It may take them a while still, but you're buoyed if you're Carlton. And so they should be, though, because
I was going to prompt you on that, but I knew it was coming anyway.
I don't know how many early draft picks they've had. It's been a long rebuild, but so they should be heading in this direction. They've got the talent there. It's just a matter of now getting some games into their legs, which they're getting, and, you know, great. I think a really strong, robust Carlton playing regularly big games of football and contending in them is good for the competition.
Well, certainly, I don't think anyone should be given a leg up, but certainly it's bad for the competition when Carlton are as bad as they have been. I think we want Carlton, you know, no lower than 12th, really, where they're in the fight for the spots at the bottom end of the eight.
And let's be honest about it. I mean, you're a Freo man. I'm a Hawthorn man. We love our theme songs. But I tell you what, it's one of the better ones going around, the old Blue Boys.
The old rat-da-da-da-da.
Oh, it is good. It is nice to listen
and
to.
And the fact that it's different, I mean, that's what, you know, a lot of the others, you know, are sort of taken from other songs, but the old rat-da-da-da-da, it's got its own.
And Carlton supporters, they perform it in their own unique way too. There's certain enunciations on words, the way they do it. I tell you what, I used to get phone calls from Carlton supporters because they used to beat us regularly. And it's been such, I think they've won once in 11, 12 years against us, which was last year. But I just, I can't, I've just stopped ringing them back now. It's just
you've applied the mercy rule.
Huh? I have applied the mercy. I've got a feeling that
it's going to turn soon.
I reckon it'll turn soon. By the way, I will mention two players from the Hawthorn side of things. TJ Gromier, a terrific performance. Would not have been in the game had he not kept them in it in the first half. And also Liam Shields, first game back from a spell, three goals.
He's really, a gun,
yeah,
Liam Shields.
He is. And he does that lockdown role as well. I was really surprised. I know that it's a player's vote that he was, to me, going to be their captain.
Yeah.
And I'm not. This is nothing against Brent Stratton, who I really, really rate. But I just saw him as the logical choice. And he was being groomed as that for a long time. Mm. Things just changed. But I'm sure it doesn't bother him too much. And
he's one of those guys that flies under the radar because of who he's played alongside.
Mm.
And he's just a top-end, fundamentally sound footballer.
He certainly is. The other thing I liked about the weekend, Duff, was the whole Anzac Day rollout from go to whoa. And there's been some commentary that perhaps, you know, we should just reserve it for Anzac Eve and Anzac Day, and that because it loses its luster. I don't agree. I like the way
let's have it all in Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly. But I really like the way everyone has their own individual. But Frio's tribute has always been and still is a sensational tribute. I think they had 50 buglers out there.
Yeah.
The Bill Graydon stuff was just so moving. And Bill Graydon, who's had a remarkable career in civic duties
as well as a top-level politician in WA.
He was, and also obviously his service. Now, I've had the great honour of meeting Bill. I did the Kokoda track a few years ago, and he was a Kokoda veteran as well as serving in many other war zones. But I met these guys before the four remaining Gallipoli veterans, the Kokoda veterans, before I went and did the track, and then I revisited them afterwards with a video we'd shot up there. And there's a place called Butcher's Corner, which is in the middle of nowhere, and basically many Australians just walked into they just walked into almost certain death. And Bill had to do a reconnaissance around this saddle. And unless you've been there, it's really hard to explain. But just the absolute apex of bravery. And to see him out there, and I was just really I was moved by it. I thought it was a great effort by Freo.
I think Fremantle's Len Hall game is one of the great things that the club has done over the years. And this is what, you know, when people, and it's all commentary coming out of Melbourne, you know, because they get their Anzac Eve one now, and they get their Anzac Day one now, and then they have to sit and watch all these other things on TV, and they forget that those people in those states at those games, it means a lot to them. Fremantle's supporters are immensely proud of the Len Hall game, and rightly so, and I'm sure that Port Adelaide does similar things in Adelaide. They tend to be the one that gets the Anzac Day game there. And that's a good move by the AFL too. I think giving the smaller club in those cities something of a marquee game to hang their hat on. And, you know, even in Sydney and Queensland, I think that they're trying to build Anzac Day tradition as well. So, for goodness sake, you know, football doesn't end at the Victorian border.
No, it doesn't. I will say they still do that day well, the Collingwood Essendon and Anzac.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and as is the Melbourne Richmond Anzac Eve game as well.
But don't try and deny us our little moments as well.
Now, I will add one other thing, Duff, while I'm on the subject.
The Anzac medal.
Yeah, look. And this is nothing against it's the concept, Anzac Day. I love it. I love what
they do.
You're
not going to boo the Anzac
Day. No, I'm not going to be. That was average. We move on from that very quickly. That was just average. Just a great performance by Pendlebury. I know it was more of an assessment of the umpires, but just wait. The bloke's getting his medal. But the medal itself, I'm not comfortable with it being called the Anzac medal, Duff. I just think you don't get an Anzac medal for playing a game of footy. This certainly award a medal, but let's come up with another name for it. I'm just not really, I've never been that comfortable with it. It's a very sacred thing to us. And while, yes, fate the day, award a medal, but just the word Anzac in the medal, I'm not great with.
So would you be more comfortable if it was named after a war hero as opposed to
Alec Campbell was the last Gallipoli veteran to pass away. I think he got to Gallipoli as a 15-year-old and served there, survived. I'd be happy for his name to adorn the medal.
Yeah.
That would be fine by me. I think that'd be a worthy tribute. But that's just my point of view. I'm sure other people would disagree with me.
I have a feeling it won't be changed now because of the, obviously they've got this historical element to all of this now, and They wouldn't want some people being Anzac medalists and some people being, say, Alec Campbell medalists. But I think the point you make is very valid. It's kind of overreaching a little bit to call the best player in a game of football an Anzac medalist.
Yeah, that's my point.
Given what they did, I love the way that coaches talk about this game, and they talk about it as a chance to play in the spirit that they showed, as opposed to, you know, trying to make this comparable to war. And I think they strike the right chord in that. And I think you make a good point on the medalist thing. I think that it's overreaching a little bit. Let's run through the round.
Yes.
Because there was some significant implications to come out of the round. And let's start on Wednesday night.
Mm.
Okay. In a nutshell, Melbourne, Cooks.
I think top four's out of reach. They can still make the eight by virtue of numbers and by the virtue we're only at round seven. But, gee, it's not looking good for them right now. I'll say this. Have to beat Hawthorn this weekend or that's it, finals done and dusted, I think, for the weekend. They just look like they've really been affected by the lack of a really good preseason,
yep.
Lack of really good conditioning. We know we're better than the performances they produced. Clearly, they made the trade to bring May in and to out-trade Jesse Hogan, and we'll never know. I think May will be a good inclusion eventually.
No, I think it's too early. Yeah,
it's too early. It is too early.
But you know what? They went the early gloat on that one, Melbourne. They were quietly sniggering away when Jesse was having his issues over summer and in the run into the season. They were quietly sniggering away and sort of going, well, we got rid of that problem, and now Jesse's bobbed up and played five, and Stephen May's got himself suspended and then injured.
Yep.
So there's a bit of karma coming back to bite him there. I suspect May will be important as the season goes on, but I do wonder about their forward structure. They put a lot on Sam Wiedemann's shoulders.
Yeah.
I think for a team in contention for a flag, they put a lot on the shoulders of a kid that had played less than 30 games and basically bobbed up and taken a couple of big marks in a final.
Can play, and Tom McDonald's obviously had success there as well. I think what you're seeing is with no Jesse Hogan there now, there's two genuine targets down there, and it's telling. There's not that third target. So I think that's really hurt them. Yeah, the other side of this equation is Richmond. We said about 3 weeks ago, this is going to be a really defining period for that club. They've been through the up period. They've defined themselves, in my view, the last 3 weeks. I think they've been outstanding. They're back up to their eyeballs in it. Now, I know Jack Riewoldt's out for another 4 to 6, but they've unearthed a couple of guns in this. And Sydney Stack, he'll be a rising star nomination soon. He'll be on the list. Has to be.
The way he plays, they want to get it in quick because he may hurt himself at some point. The hang.
But the hip and shoulder on Viney. Viney's out for 2 weeks. And that was just what you call a great hip and shoulder. Legal and brutal, but coaches would want to get that footage and say, that's how you do it. And that's what Aussie Rules footy's about. Yeah, I'm really sorry that Viney's out for a couple of weeks, but that's footy. You know, that's just the way it goes.
You know, the other thing that's emerged out of all this, well, two things I reckon have emerged out of all this quarters. One is Josh Caddy's importance to Richmond,
mm-hmm.
massively important. And two, Dylan Grimes is a flat out gun.
Yeah, and you know what? So is Vlastun.
Yeah, Vlastun too.
He's an absolute gun. So they've got him. I think they're back in it up to their eyeballs. And look, I picked them pre-season. They've still got some issues, but you know, you wouldn't want to be playing Richmond. You know, they're very much a big chance. Thursday, Collingwood, Essendon. I mean, Essendon lost no admirers in the way they went about that game. I know there were a couple of questionable umpiring decisions. Really interesting, the aftermath of that too, about Sean Ryan coming out and explaining they were all correct.
This is my problem with this. I reckon there was one in a game. It might have been, I think it was a West Coast game, because I had a debate with a West Coast supporter, and there was a free kick that could have gone, it could have been below the knees, or it could have been a trip. And
there are a dozen of them at the weekend, Duff, all over the round.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And those Essendon...
I know what it was. It was the steel side bottom one with Cripps tumbling over side bottom in round three. And basically, umpires ticked off on it and said, you know, that's a free kick. But my point to the supporter that basically raised the controversy issue about it was that had they paid it the other way and had they paid high contact to the Collingwood player, they would have turned around and said, well, clearly he's made contact with his head, so that's a free kick. The self-justification in this, I think they're better off taking the approach of saying, look...
The umpires, you mean?
Yeah. These are incredibly difficult calls. And in many respects, there are two very possible and two very explainable outcomes to the call. And sometimes it's a free kick either way, or sometimes it's a free kick or play on.
Should it be the head of umpiring and should it be done immediately? So should it be done the next morning or later that night?
I think they should just continually reinforce, rather than trying to prove themselves right.
You don't think they should need to come out and have
a discourse
on it? No,
because they're being judged anyway. And when they say that black is white, we say, you're making that up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when, like, the classic example of the one in the grand final last year where Rioli probably blocks Maynard and then Sheed probably plays on. But as Craig O'Donoghue, our umpire in residence on the writing panel of the West Australian, says, when you view the calls in the context of the way the game was umpired, they were paying nothing.
Yeah.
They put the whistles had been put away in their pocket. So basically his argument that at the very least the block should not have been paid in the context of the way the game was being umpired. And the point that I think Cod was making is that, you know, they have to judge these things and they're situational and...
And they judge them in an absolute nanosecond. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, as Alistair Clarkson said at the weekend, it is the most difficult sport in the world, umpire.
I've got no doubt about that.
And so it is a really hard job. I think they do a very good job.
Yep.
There is a lot of confusion over one week it's paid, one week it's not. In fact, one quarter it's paid, the next quarter it's not. But the problem is that creates anger and the anger manifests, and that's what we saw at the end of the Essendon-Collingwood game. And it was just unfortunate.
But this is always going to be the case. Mm. And what we need to do is educate the public that, you know, like, umpire bashing was rife 20 years ago, now less so.
Is it? I reckon it's still as strong as ever.
No, I don't think so. I think umpire bashing was rank in the 80s and 90s. The names they were called, they were dehumanised umpires, I think.
Well, you're talking white maggots and what have you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think there's been a strong campaign to reinforce with people, this is bloody hard. It's bloody hard to do. And often there are two possible outcomes, and both of those outcomes are legitimate. The umpire can see what he sees depending what the angle he looks at it, and he can say, this is what I'm seeing. And there's a great example on the weekend, which was the dangerous tackle awarded against Sam Wright in the Friday night game. And I think it was Dersma got sort of barreled head first into the ground. Now, the umpire who viewed it from behind...
Yeah, it was two angles, wasn't
viewed
there,
it as dropping the ball, yeah, because Wright fell to the side of Dersma and didn't pile in on top of him. But the guy back in the centre square who viewed the side-on angle and saw Dersma's head driven into the deck, he viewed it as a dangerous tackle. So all these things have completely different outcomes based on the perspective that the umpire views it from. And I think also they have completely different outcomes viewed on the time of the game, because umpires are told not to guess, and they're also told, where possible, not to influence the outcome of the contest.
Do we need to revisit the old What's Your Decision? Remember that in the 80s? And we can have a half-hour show on maybe one of the channels of Seven or wherever it is, but where we explain the contentious decisions each week. But just to articulate, this is why it was given and this is why it wasn't given. Probably wouldn't hurt.
And most of the times, so what used to happen in the press box, because I used to sit next to Craig, and I used to be a bit of a, you know, by the time I sat down to write, I would have cooled down and logic would have taken over again. But every now and again, in the heat of the moment in the game, I was like, how did he pay that, you know? And I turned to Craig. And Craig, how did he pay that? And Craig would give me a reasoned and logical explanation as to, according to the way they've trained, as to how the umpire had came to that conclusion. And I think that this is what we need to be reinforcing with people. I think they're making a mistake when they try and justify these decisions, because there was a couple on Anzac Day which were at the very least ambiguous and possibly incorrect. They need to reinforce that it is incredibly difficult and the view from where the umpire saw it would have indicated this. We understand that the opposing view is that it could have been this. And attack it from that point of view. I think there's self-justification in what they're doing, and I think it doesn't wash with the people. And I think the more time you catch the AFL in spin mode, the less credibility they have, and I think that affects them in other areas as well.
Well, what we did take out of it, apart from that, was that Pendlebury's still a Jet. Grundy's still a Jet. And Danaher looks like he's clawing his way back to some sort of form. So
that was one of the great Anzac Day games.
It was. Well, there's been many of them. I'll tell you who goes all right too is Redmond in defence for Essendon. He's got some talent. So
what about Cale Hooger's mark?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this, and there's 92,000 there, mate. I mean, this is just crackerjack stuff. You know, it really is. Port Adelaide defeated North Melbourne by 16 points on the Friday night. Unfortunately, out of that, I think Robbie Gray is going to miss 4 weeks with a broken hand. Hasn't been great this year. He's been underwhelming this year, Robbie. But Port Adelaide roll on. You know, there's been a lot of commentary about North. I didn't think they were that bad. I thought North had actually took a step forward in that game, even though they lost. It wasn't a big loss.
They kind of trudged away, didn't they?
They found a forward. Like, Larky, three goals, looks the bit. So they
And that's important because the lack of an alternative to Ben Brown has really hurt.
And that's really hurt. That's been the telling story for them this year. And because of that, there's been a lack of confidence going forward. So that's something for them. But I thought, actually, North took a step forward, but sort of Port rolls on.
So what we saw at the weekend was Brad Scott put Jack Zeeble into the engine room.
Yeah.
That needs to continue, doesn't it? I think when Sean Higgins comes back from illness, I think Higgins, Zeeble, Cunnington, they've got to be your three prime movers in the midfield, don't
right
they?
Right now they do. I like Zeeble forward, but right now I don't think they've got any option. Yeah. They need, once they get players back and a bit of youth develops, then yes.
Those three at ground level with Goldstein rucking and Pollock on the outside, you'll beat a few teams with an engine room like that. But I don't think they're beaten too many by trying to camp Jack Zeeble forward and having a diluted midfield.
I like your Colin Cunnington too.
Well, mate, how many people is he going to be allowed to dong? I mean, seriously. And he doesn't dong them when the ball's there. He just dongs them whenever he feels like it.
Yeah, he's a donger.
He's a donger. He's a great player, Ben Cunnington, and I love him. You know, like, he's a monster of a man. He doesn't flinch in the clinches. He goes hard. He wins contested ball. But he's got a temper.
No.
And every now and again, he just lets it get the better of him.
Yeah. I don't know if it's even a temper.
Imagine quarters.
I think it's a predilection to just dong people. I think he needs to be angry.
Imagine playing suburban or country footy against a 38-year-old Ben Cunnington when he's just on the way out.
Well, yeah, that would be intimidating.
You just get whacked every 5 seconds, wouldn't you? There's no video. Oh, my God. Love him as a player, but he's got to get a week soon. If this continues, they just have to say, Ben, we can't keep fining you, mate. You're getting a week for this.
The other games, a couple of significant ones on the Saturday. GWS defeated Sydney in the second half, got on top. It was a bit of an arm wrestle in the first half. Nobody. I think it's funny in the aftermath. Special mention to Canelio too, four goals. Very special game.
What a gun.
Just rolls on.
What a gun.
Interesting, the commentary from Sydney afterwards using anything but the rebuild word.
So other teams refuse to use the F word. And Sydney refused to use the R word. Quarters, they're rebuilding.
Yeah, I think they are. They are. There's, interestingly, even now some suggestion that they should bring back COLA, the cost of living away allowance, because when Buddy leaves Sydney eventually, where are they going to be? I think Sydney is very important. The Swans are strong while they're developing Western Sydney. I'm not a COLA fan, by the way, but interesting that popped up over the weekend.
I'll tell you who's going to be a massive loss for Sydney. Andrew Ireland is going to be a massive loss for Sydney. One of the smartest operators in footy.
And it just gives them great stability.
But he's also smart, and he's been able to look at the industry in a different way, and he's been able to manufacture a very competitive and strong list that suits their home ground. And he's been able to do it in a different way.
How many years successive finals have they played? We're talking a decade.
I think they've missed. There was a year in there where they missed one.
Yeah. So, if you're a Sydney supporter, you're pretty happy with the lot you've got, and you can sit back now and say, you know, you've got some credit in the bank. We'll sit back now and as you redevelop, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, it wouldn't. Hopefully, it's not too far away.
So, and I think the big question for them is, where does their next midfield come from? Mm. Yeah, McCartan's a kid. He looks promising. Looks more promising in attack than defence.
Yeah. Well, Mills and Heaney are in there, but they need Heaney, to.
But where do they use them? I think that's the question, because the mail I'm getting out of people who know Sydney's list a bit is they're not sure that Heaney translates to a midfielder. They think he'll be one of a Toby Green type, an elite mid-sized forward, and they're incredibly valuable. And Mills is that great play reader across halfback. Can either of them become a midfielder?
I'd say Mills on a wing.
Yeah, okay. I think his dad played on a wing for Perth.
Did he? Okay.
I think.
But I think they're at the stage now where they're just going to have to roll the dice and try players in certain positions and try and get it right. I think there was some suggestions last night on one of the shows that they really need to get either a forward line right or a defence right or a midfield. Just get something right, because at the moment they're all over the shop, but not by design, just by circumstance. So they just need to get something right and then build from there.
I reckon they need to decide, okay, so the first thing I would be doing, and we don't know about injuries, so the first thing I'd be doing, Kennedy, full-time midfielder, which he is.
Mm.
Parker, they've been splitting between midfield foot. Luke Parker's a full-time midfielder.
Yep.
He stays in there. And then if I'm picking a kid at the moment who goes in with them, or two kids, I'd say Hewitt, big, strong body, disciplined, runs both ways, and the other one is Florent. So they all go in there.
I like Florent.
And Zach Jones, bit less bluff and bluster, thanks, Zach, and a bit more productivity. But he's part of that as well. Leave Heaney forward. Leave Mills back for now. As you said, maybe on a wing. You've got Rampy in defence. You've got McCartan, Franklin to come back in and attack. You win a few more games with that lot. And then you'll finish down the table a little bit. You get a better draft pick. And then you build from there.
Minus 34 in contested possessions. That's un-Sydney-like. So
that's been their brand all year, Quarters.
Yeah, this year. Yeah, and again, the losses at the SCG continue.
But do you know what that is? That's kids.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's like they've had old, hard warriors, and they haven't got them anymore. They've got kids in there getting beat up.
You look at the GWS side too. You look at, you know, the Cornelios, Tarano, Hopper. You forget down back there's a soldier back there, and that's Heath Shaw, who's having a great year too. He's just having one out.
Changed his role.
Adelaide defeated St Kilda by 29 points at Marvel Stadium. I was a bit disappointed in this because I was telling everyone all weekend, I picked Adelaide, and I realised I didn't. So there you go. I was disappointed with that. But Taylor Walker and Alex Keith, two stories from Adelaide. Oh, the third story is probably Himmelberg coming in. What happens to Josh Jenkins now? Because they're not changing. Himmelberg stays in this week. So I think Josh has got another week in the sandful. And St Kilda have had a good start to the year, but I think we might see them starting to level off a little bit now, and they'll be a bit more gettable at the moment. I hope I'm wrong, but that's how I see it.
What about Matty Parker?
Three goals. Has been one of the highlights, I think, this year. You know, Subi boy, explosive.
South Freo.
Yeah, sorry, South Freo boy. Sorry, Bulldogs.
Don't deny my team the credit.
But he's the type of player you go to see, because you don't know whether he's going to kick one from an acute angle or put it out in the full and or take a hang.
There is a bit of that about him.
Oh, he's just mercurial. He's mercurial.
Yeah.
And good on him. Brisbane defeated Gold Coast 49 points again. Got on top in the second half, and I know you talked. You mentioned this in your column earlier in the week, but really bad idea to schedule this earlier in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, having 13th, those players up there play in front of a big crowd,
13,600. It's not good enough for a Q clash.
No, it's really important to Gold Coast in particular that these games, they have the opportunity to play in front of a big crowd, that their players get to run out and puff their chest out and go, hey, we're in the AFL. And they've blown the opportunity. It should have been a twilight game.
I think you pointed out that it was the start of junior footy.
So have it earlier in the year.
Plus,
as well,
it's probably the time of day, early arvo. It's hot.
They're hiding away from the sun.
You're going to go for a surf. That's what they do on the Gold Coast.
Yep.
Or head to the beach.
Yep.
So it was just a perfect storm not to get a crowd. Interesting comment, too, made, I think, might have been Jonathan Brown, but last night about the Brisbane supporters tend not to go.
Yeah.
Down to the Gold Coast.
They don't travel.
They don't travel. So they need to really look at the scheduling of that, make it a night game, I think, on the Saturday night.
The only other thing, maybe the two clubs need to get together and talk about how do we make the Q Clash a big event.
They don't already?
Oh.
Should.
Footy clubs are footy clubs.
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah. Well, they should. On to Saturday, Frio are really...
The Mundy 300.
The Mundy 300. You're so glad they won. Yeah, it was a great name. And well done, Frio Cheer Squad, for getting the banner right after these 250. Very lackluster, but well done. We gave them a whack, so we'll give them throw out the bouquet.
Do you know they changed the policy on their banner writing after that? All writings on the banner had to be run past the club.
Oh, well. It was great to see, you know, there were quite a few notable performances in that game. But we could get past Mundy. Classic Mundy game. You know, grunt, bit of class, couple of goals, just a classic Mundy game. And Matera, 5 goals. Now, I know he got a couple out the back, but still 5. He's kicked, what, 9 in 2 weeks?
He's kicked 9 in 2 weeks. He's kicked 12 for the season.
So he looks fit and looks like he's ready to, you know, get the consistency is what I think Frio's been after, and I think it's there right now.
You know what he gives them? And often you crave the thing you lack. Brandon Matera gives him finish.
Yep.
And how often have we seen in the past, even 3, 4, 5 years, that opportunity created at Fremantle, it turns into nothing?
Well,
because a bloke fumbles or a bloke misses the shot or a bloke, you know, takes the wrong option. Brandon Matera, with the ball in his hands within 30 metres of goal, you know he's a bloody good bet to kick the goal.
Yeah, which is, and there's not many of them at the moment. There's a lot of good players missing a lot of easy set shots or shots on the run that they should kick. It's one of my great frustrations watching it. It's goals that are gettable. I know there's perceived pressure, but you should be good enough to kick most of those, I think.
And the other player that I really loved, Quarters, was Switkowski.
Yeah, gave him a bit, didn't he?
Two great chase down tackles, great forward pressure.
And you know what? Dogs didn't do much wrong. They were in it right up to their eyeballs very late in the game. Caleb Daniel, I continue to he's just a remarkable player, isn't he?
It's amazing. It's amazing someone doesn't step on him when they're out there. He's so small.
Yeah, I know. They're all Kudafidis type size now, aren't they? So,
but his ball use on Saturday night was absolutely exquisite. I thought Lockie Hunter's game on a wing was sensational. I think he got the coaches' votes, actually. I think
Lockie Hunter did get, yeah, he got 10.
He got the best on ground from both the coaches. Mundy was great. Fremantle's defence now very good.
Yeah.
We've loved Pierce Hamling. We've loved Luke Ryan. But I think Ethan Hughes is evolving Quarters. I think that was the best game I've seen Nathan Wilson play in Fremantle jumper.
So what you're talking about is they're solid now.
Yeah, they
reliable.
Are.
Reliable.
Yeah, you can
they
trust
all
them.
Have their role,
yep.
And they don't try and overstep their role.
Yep, you can trust them.
So though. That's, you know, it all starts from defence, as we know. So, you know, lots to like about Frio. Having said that, we're going to see over the next 5-6 weeks. I think it's funny. Everyone's walking around saying, I told you they'd be here. Now, I didn't expect they'd be where they are right now. And they're playing really well and good on them. But Adelaide, Richmond, Essendon, Brisbane, Collingwood, the next 5 games. So that's going to, you know, we'll find out where they're at.
Yeah. I expected them to be 4-2. I just expected the two losses to be GWS and West Coast and Gold Coast to be one of the wins. So they've lost one we thought they'd win, and they've won one we thought they'd lose. But I do like the way they're playing. And now, you know, and this is big rider on this, we'll wait and see how they go over the next month. Right now, as I sit here, I'm thinking they're a 50-50 chance for finals.
I'd agree with that right now. They have to be. The way they're playing, and there's some, as you said, reliability about them at the moment.
Yeah.
So we expected them to go over to Canberra and get flogged by GWS, and that didn't happen. So there's a bit of reliability about
them. And that'll give them great belief this week going to Adelaide because Adelaide hasn't been a happy hunting ground for Frio.
But Adelaide hasn't been playing well in Adelaide. They've been a bit up and down, so they're gettable. So we'll see what happens. Last but not least, Duff, KP, get in your park. It's a dark place to go at the best of times.
Even on a chartered flight, it's a dark place to go.
I lived there for 8 years. I love Geelong. I love it. It's a great place. But when you're a visiting team, you go there and play footy and things aren't going well, yeah, it can be a horrible destination. So, 445 possessions to 299, 138 marks to 68. Adam Simpson summed it up perfectly. We've just got to get the footy. I think he's right. And I don't think it's panic stations, by the way. Is it a premiership hangover? No, it might be a headache. Maybe they need to take a couple of aspirin, but I don't think it's a hangover. I think it's too early. The 3-3, it's not disaster. They've got a reasonable draw coming up. Gold Coast, St Kilda, Melbourne, Adelaide, Western Bulldogs. They could win four of those five easily. But they need to address the issue that Adam Simpson mentioned many times in his conference. That's it. They need to show a bit more attack on the footy.
You know how... you'll be able to read this in the West tomorrow. I'm writing a column on it. You know how Mick Malthouse has the premiership clock?
Yep.
And he's got West Coast in the sweet spot for back-to-back premierships. Adam Simpson needs an alarm clock. His players need to wake up. And they've hit snooze a few times this year. They hit snooze after round one.
In round one, yeah.
When they got the wake-up call against Brisbane.
Yep.
They hit snooze, I think, when they were 47-62 inside 50s against GWS, and they said, well, you know, we did them on intercept and turnover. They hit snooze when they lost the last three quarters against Fremantle in round four, but still won by 13 points. And they hit snooze and put it down to a bad night when they got towed up by Port Adelaide. It is time for Adam Simpson to get the bell out, to go around to the dormitory and ring it until everyone gets out of bed and puts their clothes on and goes to work. You summed it up. They need to go and get the footy. And if they get the footy, then all of their other strengths of their game will come into play, which is ball movement, skill execution, patterns of play, heading inside, attacking 50. All those things will come into play if they get the footy. None of those things will come into play if they don't start to win contested ball. They are trailing the field in the contest. And
they are, but it's only round seven. So
yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I think that this is not a catastrophe.
The best time to have this problem. If you're going to have a premiership headache, let's call it a headache, then this is the time to have it, I reckon.
You know what would have woken them up 2 weeks earlier? If Fremantle had a kick straighter and won the Derby.
Yeah.
That would have woken them up. But what they did is they, we won and we didn't handle the ball cleanly. Yeah. And then the next week, Port Adelaide essentially did the same thing to them and took their chances. We just had an off night. You can't dodge it anymore. And quarters, you're right. Cardinia Park can be a dark, dark place.
It's the shape of it too. It's narrow. It's long. The wing seems like it goes forever. And I know I lived opposite one of them.
And we saw Richmond come here last year and get done by about the same margin. And none of us thought Richmond were out of the premiership race as a result of that. But West Coast has to get back to work. I think Jake Waterman needs to come in. I think Oscar Allen needs a spell in the waffle. I don't know what that means for their second ruck because Nathan Vardy can't get near it.
And Hickey was okay.
I think Hickey was one of their better ones. Yeah, and they didn't have many.
Geelong had a few.
What about Little Gaz? Little Gaz inside 50 in the first quarter.
Yeah, it's just a distribution of the footy. And
four goal assists in a quarter of footy.
He's round back the clock. Seems to be enjoying that position too, the predominantly forward position.
I'll tell you who is enjoying Gary Ablett's position is Gary Rowan.
Now, interesting. Was he misused at Sydney?
No.
I guess it's hard when you're stuck next to Buddy, but...
I think... what you have to take into consideration is what sort of football team was Sydney and what sort of football team is Geelong. Sydney was a very good team, but a completely different style of team. A two-goal game for Gary Rowan at Sydney with 10 possessions and five chase-down tackles was an elite performance, whereas at Geelong, it's probably going to have to be three or four goals and 12 to 15 possessions. A different style of game, it's... you know, Gary Rowan eked out a tough living the way the Swans played, and he managed to do it over a number of seasons. It was time for him to go to get a new lease on life, and he's got it. But he mainly got it because he was on the end of four Gary Ablett masterpieces in the first quarter.
And they have got options there now, and they've got speed, and I think there's a lot to like. Hawkins is playing with a lot more vigour, youthful vigour, I will call it, and not just on the scoreboard, but his assists as well. The other thing they've at the moment, that defence looks really solid. It looks as solid as it did in their glory era. And yeah. so that's going to help. And we know how good their midfield is. So.
And they're playing pressure footy forward to centre.
That's, now, again, it's round seven, so let's not get carried away. But right now, I have them. They're the best team in it right now. But there's a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm not ready to call that, but right now they're the form team.
Well, they are. Yeah, let's call it the form team. Exactly. Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. I think that they've survived a tough draw. They've done that with considerable aplomb, and they deserve to be on top of the ladder exactly where they are.
How many did you get, Duff?
Eight.
Yeah, so did I. I thought I got nine, but I got eight. I'll take eight the way this season's going. I think a lot of people would have got seven or eight this weekend. Few would have dragged nine for sure. So, it was a long round. It was like a marathon round.
Do you know, in the first five rounds, if you'd have just not worried about who was going to win and put $100 on every team in every game, you'd have won $1,200. That's how many upsets there were.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I think the percentage-wise, there's been more upsets than they've ever been this season. So, which I guess the AFL will be rubbing their hands together saying that's a great result for us.
The AFL
it's all about football socialisation.
They can rub their hands together.
Yes, they can.
Thank you very much for joining us today. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about the machinations of the upcoming round.
You keeping having that hot lemon drink and the honey, Duff?
Yeah, I've had a few of them over the last few days. Yeah. I like a bit more of the honey and a bit less of the lemon. But anyway.
Well done for coming in.
We'll hopefully tip you a couple of winners on Thursday. We're back in form on tipping, although this round was a little bit easier to tip.
Yeah, it was.
And enjoy your week.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.